Okay. There were three questions up there, and I forgot them in my room, but two I remember. One was about doubt. It's like, you know, doubt can be negative or positive. Please elaborate on that. Yeah, very easy. Usually, from a wrong, you know, it's a very structured way to go from a wrong view to a right view. So it's not from wrong view to right view. So you have a wrong view of inherent existence, let's say. Then you hear about the teachings of emptiness. So then first you go like, yeah, well, very interesting, but, you know, a bit funny, strange, whatever. And but still, there is some doubt in the mind. And then this doubt can, first it tends to the negative, you know, or let's take maybe something more simple. You have an opinion, a view about something, somebody else has a different view and different opinion. So first we go like, yeah, you know, mine is right and you are wrong. But it puts something into your mind that makes you think. So first, usually the doubt goes, yeah, who knows, but I'm right and he's wrong. Then the doubt goes into equal, yeah, maybe. And then the doubt goes more into, ah, yeah, maybe he's right. So then, again, the mind is interested and starts to investigate further. And then the doubt changes into belief. We still don't know, yeah. And then if you investigate further, then maybe it changes into what is called an inferential cognizer, that is depending on a valid sign. it's an expression from philosophy, by realizing emptiness, going through these stages. Like, you use all the logic why things are empty. You still don't perceive it directly, but you get what is called an inferential cognizer. So that would be, things are empty of inherent existence because why? What's the logic? What's the valid sign? They're a dependent arising, or they are neither one nor many. Yeah. So that's why they are empty of inherent existence. So this is what you would use as a sign to bring it a bit more understandable. We can have an inferential cognizer of fire if we see smoke, because we know fire makes smoke. We don't see the fire, but we see smoke. So then the thing would be, yeah, you remember, on the smoky hill over there is fire, because then the sign, there is smoke. Yeah, so we don't have a direct perception, but we have an inferential cognizer, and if it's based on a valid sign, it's irreversible. It is right, even though there's no direct cognition of it, it's irreversible. And then from that, now coming back to emptiness, you meditate on that, on these signs, again and again and again and again and again and again, until the inferential cognizer turns into a direct perception of absence of inherent existence. And what is the first step? Is doubt. You know, kind of yes but also sounds like doubt. So I said that we have a lot of yes buts in our life, because you can just about with anything you can say yes but, because we're living in a dualistic world. We have dualistic minds, we have dualistic perception. This is how we see the world. And so you have to check which yes but brings me where I want to get, you know, and which yes but totally blocks me. Because most of the yes buts that we're saying, they're just blocking us. So why use it? It's not that the yes but is wrong, it's just there is another yes but. And so we ourselves, we have to find out, you know, the way we speak, the way we think, it has a lot of influence in which direction we are going. So again, comes down to, we are responsible for our own happiness. So that's, hopefully that is enough for the doubt thing. Doubt is very important, because doubt makes you investigate. Yeah, so it's not blind belief, shouldn't be blind belief, should be, you know, if whatever you hear, you have an opposing view, you need to have a view, you know, I mean, having no view and just saying, I don't believe it, that's not really logic, that's just, you know. So this is why the Buddha is encouraging us to also to see, what is my view why things happen, for example? Is that view helpful? Or is it just, you know, being at the wrong time at the wrong place. Is that, then that means we have absolutely no control. If you do believe in karma, and it is a belief, it's a view. I don't know if karma really exists or not, but I do believe in it. The good thing is, it gets you immediately out of the victim role. And who wants to be in the victim role? You know, victims become quite dangerous sometimes because they think they have a right to retaliate. As you say, oops, I started it. You know, again, let's come back to this life. If Shoshana comes and she likes me, but I don't like her hair and don't like these earrings and, you know, the way she's sitting, it's so disrespectful. And I'm, it's okay, no, don't worry. And I make it kind of known by my bit dismissive behavior. Yeah, it's just theory, okay? I really do like her. So that's why I take her. I'm not taking somebody who then thinks, maybe she doesn't like me. So, but you know, she likes me, I dislike her, and I have very dismissive behavior. And all of a sudden her behavior towards me also changes, because then she starts to dislike me. So if I'm wise, I know, hey, she is unpleasant to me because I started it in this life here, okay? So then what do I do? Do I go around, tell everybody how horrible Shoshana is? She doesn't like me and she treats me in a terrible way? No, I go and tell her, look, I'm really sorry for what happened. You think we can do something about this, if I have the courage to do that? Yeah, but I can also go around, tell everybody how bad she is and feel like the victim, forgetting that I have started it. So when we see it, you know, if we could see karma, how it works, we would act totally different, but we don't, because it's one of the most hidden phenomena, okay? So the yes buts and the doubts that you have, try to work with them, you know, kind of what happens if I believe this and what happens if I believe that, because it's, as I'm saying, it's just a view, and there are other views which I don't want to say they're not true, I don't know. I like this view of karma because it gives me a choice. Just, you know, being at the wrong place and wrong time, why would I practice? Why would I want to change my mind if then everything is just random or coincidence? So that's my view. Then there was another one, what's the Buddhist perspective on using milk and leather and these kinds of things? Well, the Buddhist perspective goes much further and says, as long as you are human and you need to eat, even if you don't eat any animal products, still they have to plow the fields, still insects die, still they spray the things that you're eating, still then many animals die that wouldn't have to die because of this poison, still when the truck driver comes, like a lot of insects die, that, you know, still when you come to a Buddhist course, when you go home, your windshield is full of insects and all this. So yeah, the less you can do to harm others, the better, but just existing, we are harming beings. So that's the Buddhist perspective on that. So of course, if you can do without these things, then by all means do. It's great, it's fantastic. If you're so conscious of, like, not using plastic, but that goes into that also, because plastic is maybe even more dangerous than, you know, because when you use plastic and it goes into the oceans, then a lot of birds and fish die because they swallow it. So do you go as far as that? Or is it just the consuming? Yeah, so this is the Buddhist perspective on that. It goes very, very far. This is why we are in samsara. This is why just abstaining from negative actions is not giving you the happiness that you want. It's not enough. We have to get out. We have to stop this cycle of being reborn again and again, 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 again. And if you do use milk, then please be conscious that it comes from a cow, and the milk is actually not for you, it's for the calf, and that these cows suffer and at least generate bodhicitta, you know, and say thank you. And if you use leather shoes, I mean, usually in the summer I don't have leather shoes, but in the winter in Switzerland I have leather shoes because it's wet. You know, if I go with these shoes, then I have wet feet all the time. It doesn't make it right, you know. But again, it's not really the act of killing, because I'm not killing the animals, but it's contributing. If you eat meat, it's contributing to killing animals, because if you stop, people will stop eating, selling meat. So, but it's not a direct act of killing. This is what I mean. Yeah. And then again, you know, I mean, if you can do it, fine. Don't force others to do the same thing. This would not be the Buddhist perspective. Buddhist perspective is, I find this not good, I stop doing that, you know. And not just leather shoes, also environment. What do I throw out? How much, you know, when I buy, do you buy in the market and you bring your own bags? Or because just all the plastic bags are readily available. You know, in Switzerland they start charging for these bags. I think it's great. It's really good, even though it's very little, but still it makes people think and bring their bags. You know, in Dharamsala, there's no more plastic bags, and we survive. It's okay, you know, they have these paper kind of, it's like fabric things, and all of a sudden there came this ban, no more plastic bags in Dharamsala. I think it's fantastic, and they really pulled it through. Yeah, and the shops still survive, it's okay. So are we conscious in that also? Are we also pointing fingers at others because we have decided, okay, I become a vegan and no more leather and all this, and then I start criticizing everybody else? That's not very impressive, you know. Like, you see, when I was 18, I really wanted to change the whole world. I was in the streets demonstrating against the Vietnam War and against animal research and all this. I made everybody angry, and I even smashed windows against the Vietnam War in Switzerland. It's like, you know, this, and I thought I was doing a good thing. And then when I started practicing Buddhism, studying Buddhism, I thought, man, you know, I was doing this with a lot of anger against the Americans, which I don't even know. It was just fashionable to kind of demonstrate against the Vietnam War. And I could get out all my frustration and all my hate and scream and, you know, like kind of feel very important. And at the same time, I hated my mom. Then I found that this is really perverse here, what I'm doing. I'm asking the Americans to stop the Vietnam War, and I can't. And I'm at war, at emotional war with my mom, the one who has given me this body. So I knew where I had to start once I started with Buddhism. Now I really understand I have to change my mind, and then the world will maybe change. Yeah, so this is that view. And the third question, I'm really sorry, I forgot. But if you can be a vegan, by all means, do. It's great, but don't force others. You know, people ask me, why do you drink milk? Because I like it. You know, I know it's not the best thing to do, but even as I'm saying, even if you are eating are you aware that when you're eating vegetables that so many insects die? As a vegan, do you make prayers for these insects that they have a good rebirth? Do you find them important? Yes or no? Yeah? Not really, isn't it? The average vegan, I don't think so. That every time they eat vegetables, they think, man, so many insects have died for these vegetables. I don't think so. Sometimes, maybe. But every time? But when you see somebody eating a steak, it's like, ooh! You know? Sometimes about, you know, killing mosquito and these kind of things, when my schoolmates, because they, none of them is Buddhist, and then they, or my friends also, then they, out of instinct, they go, you know, and then they see me and go, oof, you know. I said, look, it's your karma, it's not mine. That makes them think, you know. I said, it's okay, you want to kill mosquitoes, go ahead and kill them, you know. But it's your karma, it's not mine, so... like that. It's difficult, you know, we cannot exist without harming others. Sometimes just being happy harms somebody who dislikes you, and when you're happy, then they're angry. The intention is missing, of course, but, you know, so, yeah. So, but if you can stop eating meat, it's good. If you can stop drinking cow milk, it's also good, you know. But it's a whole industry that then goes bust, and then people, they lose their jobs, and the cows need to get killed because nobody is taking the milk anymore and whatever. You see, we talk about this tomorrow. Samsara is like a thorn bush on our shoulders, and we want to be without suffering. But as long as we have this thorn bush, whether you forwards, backwards, left, right, it will always hurt. So try to do the least harm possible, and but it's still not enough, you know. So the way, who is that? The way Aryadeva describes it, first you give up negative actions. That's the first step, you know. Second, you give up your negative emotions. Third, you have to give up all views. But you cannot give up all views when you don't know what you're giving up. Yeah, so like that. The third question, whoever asked it, can you remember what it was? I can't remember. There were three things.
It was if karma is definite.
Oh right, yep.
Then does that mean that everything that happens is inevitable?
What do you think?
I'm a little torn.
Huh?
I'm a little torn. I used to think so, but I'm questioning that.
Yeah, we talked about purification this afternoon, right? So we can purify negative, we can purify negative imprints. We can. I mean, from the Buddhist perspective, yes, you can.
But isn't the access to the ideas of purification inevitable as well as the ability to?
Yeah. Okay, it's the thing about free will, isn't it? Yeah. Do we have free will? Yes, to a certain extent. So, but I mean, what does it mean, free will? If I go to a pizzeria and there's spaghettis and pizzas and tortelloni and lasagna and la 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 la, and do I have the menu? Do I have total free will what I want to order?
Not exactly.
I can only order what is there. If I want chow mein, I need to go to a Chinese restaurant. Although now they mix everything together. The pizzeria that we were, they had Chinese food as well. It's like we were in Sachnin, we were in a pizzeria, they had everything.
You need a new example.
So, you know, or I have the choice to talk to you, I have the free will to talk to you in Swiss German, in German, French, Italian, Spanish, English. But I can't talk to you in Hebrew because I haven't created that choice. I could, no, if I wanted to, but then again, it's quite good what you point out. I also need that other people then understand, so it's not enough. I can choose to do that in Bern, but I cannot choose to do this here. Sometimes not even there, because we have Germans and they don't understand Swiss German. So then I have to speak German, which is fine, you know. So, yeah, so no, I mean, it is... You can manipulate karma. Everything is manipulative in karma, and the more you understand that you do have some, you know, the more you understand why it's just something coming back, the less you react in the same way, because you know. And if you have, you know, things happening that you really like, then also you go like, wow, positive karma ripening. I like that. Let's create more of that, more of these seeds, like that. Yeah, and. As I'm saying, you know, a negative action ripening in terms of something negative happening to you, that can make you very angry, or it can make you very compassionate by thinking, oh, wow, I really don't like that. This person who did this to me, they will have to undergo the same thing. That's very high thinking. So instead of being angry at them, you have compassion. And if you have compassion, you protect yourself from harming back. Because you see how karma works also, this is why anger is dangerous, that we keep. In another life, we might meet that person again, but the roles are changed. And because the anger is still there, unconsciously almost, we give it back. And then again, we become the victim. So usually it is said, you know, whoever is an aggressor makes himself that instant has the potential to be a victim. So, yes, you can. You know, the fact of being here is karma also. The fact of, for some people, you know, as I told you, like I heard about karma, I totally believed it. I spent sleepless night. I was really ready to become a Buddhist and to do purification practice. But not everybody of these 200 people on the course. Yeah? But it doesn't mean that nothing happened to them, like they have heard things that maybe further down the line will ripen at one point. We don't know. So it's not like 2 and 2 is 4. It's not exactly like this. We have, the more awareness you have, like where's the choice, is in the awareness. When you feel the negative emotion rising and you're aware of it and you say stop, no, it will still continue, but the emotion, but maybe you will be able to shut your mouth at that moment. And then you don't have to regret anything if you are aware. Only then. And you know, as I think I already said also in this course, when people have a certain opinion of themselves, unless you do awareness meditation, like really watching the mind, how the mind is going, how it's reacting, for at least 3-4 years, you cannot say how you are. And it's a good thing, because you might be destroyed by what you see. Whereas if you do practices for 3-4 years, we have all the tools ready to transform. And then the subtle mind or the subconsciousness releases these very unpleasant things about us, because about ourselves, because then it's safe. So it's actually quite a good mechanism that we have. So please don't go around everybody, you know, to tell everybody how bad they are. They might not be able to take it. They might jump off a cliff. You can't, here in Israel you don't have high cliffs. They might jump on your train. Oh yeah, this one would be enough actually. So is that huh? What's that?
Don't.
Yeah, don't. It's really not good karma. So that's okay? Like that? You can use your free will for the choices that you have created. And it's like that with everything, you know, even the Buddhist, whatever, we don't have really free will. We have free will according to what is there, what is available. You can still choose, but not choose something that is not there. You know, free will, I mean, if there would be free will, who would suffer? I wouldn't suffer, thank you very much. You know, I wouldn't have negative emotions, I would throw them in the garbage immediately. So if I would have the free will to just let them go, that'd be great. But we need to create the causes, yeah. And we can make choices. And the more the calmer you are, the more sober you are, the more you know about the teachings, and the more you do mindfulness meditation or awareness meditation, then the easier it becomes, or the more choices you have. And also you have the strength and the courage to look at your negative sides without it destroying you. And then something really starts to transform. Actually, transformation very often happens by just seeing what you're doing, really clearly seeing what you're doing, you know? And then the change can be really drastic, that you don't react like this anymore. There seems to be something in the brain that all of a sudden, it understands, you know? When sometimes you're not even consciously aware, but all of a sudden you see, what am I doing? You know, like, not with words, but just, you see what I mean? We have moments like this where we, on a very deep level, understand. The thing happened to me at one point. Again, I always tell the same story, sorry for those who have heard it before, but it was really drastic. I had dislike for a person that I had to work with, and she forgot to make photocopies, and I was just about to explode. Because it was at Tushita, and you need to go back to, you know, you need to go down to MacLeod and all this, and I needed them now. It wasn't even true. You know, it was actually those photocopies, because it was a death and dying course. I felt like, and I thought like, hey, not with words, but I saw what I was doing, and I saw that I was happy that she forgot to make the photocopies so I could hurt her with my anger. I was happy that she had made a mistake. And the moment I saw it, my dislike for her was gone. It's quite amazing. But then, of course, because I'd really not been kind to her for quite a while, she didn't trust me for at least a year. And then we became really good friends. It's quite amazing how a dislike that we, you know, that we think we can never get rid of, when you start to see what's going on, it can just go whoosh and it's gone. I'm sure you have experienced that as well. you know, or somebody that you liked very much, you know, because there was a lot of attachment. All of a sudden, you know. But this one is more all of a sudden. Or it can also be through something that is happening, can just go like that. Can go very, very quickly, dislike and dislikes. Also, don't, you know, it's all impermanent and it needs causes, conditions and all this. Yeah, so then sometimes with this awareness that we're training in the meditation, the fruits of it you get out there, not on your cushion. You don't need to have results and feel peaceful and open and blah, blah. We're only training the mind. Yeah, and Venerable René Foisy, he used a really nice example. Just continue with the same method. And just continue. Then it is like water, you know. When there's no channel yet, the water goes a bit everywhere. But slowly, slowly, if it's always the same grade. You remember he used that in the Vipassana, in the Mahamudra retreat? Like, then all of a sudden the water starts to make a small channel. And then the water always goes down there. And every time it goes down there, it makes the channel deeper. And then your mind, your awareness or your mindfulness, your concentration will be contained in the channel that you have carved through your practice by always using the same method. Yeah. So just continue. You don't need to have results here on your cushion. As I'm saying, you will feel the fruits when you go out, and then all of a sudden you have moments of going, wow, yeah, that you see that you react differently, or you see how you react, you really see how you react, and things like that. Okay? Great. Do you have any other things that are really pressing, or? Okay. Okay? Huh? Yeah, this is the problem when you're tall. Then you're sometimes sitting in people's view. Okay, so what we're going to do this evening, and I won't do it very long so that you're really comfortable. So we are training how to die. And until now, nobody has died yet in that meditation. Everybody came back, so it's okay. Don't worry, but one time will be the first time that somebody dies, you know, because... But then that would be the perfect moment. Wow, you know, being able to die, really going step by step, very consciously, going into the clear light and then going, that would be... You see, like death is like you have been wearing the same shawl for years and years and years and years, the body. Okay, it's full of holes. It doesn't really protect you anymore. It's full of spots and dirt and all this, and we refuse to throw it away. And death is just getting a new body. And you know, the thing is, living with these lamas, we had Geshe Senge, who was quite old. He was from Mongolia, a Mongolian lama, and he was quite naughty actually, because he could go to Tibet because he was Mongolian and he could say what he wanted to say. He was very courageous. Geshe Senge, a very funny man, had a lot of humor and sparkling eyes, but he had the signs of old age. He would dribble spit, he would sometimes make pee pee in his pants, you could smell. He did not hear well anymore, his attendant, when he talked to him, he went wah, 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 into his ear. But when he taught without any text, you know, he gave Hayagriva initiation without any text, like by heart. He gave us a commentary on the Vajrasattva practices, like with so much enthusiasm and, you know, and wow. And if you looked into his eyes, you could see the whole universe. So one day he says, you know, my body is just like a hand with only half a finger left. 2 weeks later, he was dead. He left. He said, what's the point? Then, 3 years, then no more than 3 years, I saw him again when he was maybe 7 years old. So it was quite moving to see the seven-year-old boy in the same room, in Lama Yeshe's room in Tushita. He had dinner there, he came to visit, that I had received the commentary on Vajrasattva from his previous reincarnation. It's quite amazing. So now you can believe me or not believe me. You can say, well, how do you know that it's really the reincarnation? I don't know. But they're quite special, these kids, by the way. So again, you need to have contact with this. You know, I'm not superstitious, but I've seen too many things not to believe in the in this. Yeah, so anyway. So it's also part of the Tibetan tradition. They're looking, you know, for minds who are very, I'd say, evolved. When they die, they're looking for them again, you know. So it's not, then it's not just a wonderful person, and they channel them again into the same education, and you know, so that they can just continue. Some tulkus they don't want, and then they get very rebellious. And they don't want to be, huh? Dhamma Özal, yeah. He left the monastery because he said that's not my way. It's not my path. He has another path. He's a wonderful person. He must be like 25, 26 by now, 30 already. Okay. He appears here and there. He says I can be of more benefit to young people being a normal, ordinary Westerner. You know, he became a punk first. We had this hairstyle like this. And Kunkien, his brother, he told us the story. They were hitchhiking in Ibiza because mother lives in Ibiza. And so they were hitchhiking, and this young guy who was a computer person, you know, flashy car and lots of money, and he's telling the two. Kunkien was not a punk, but Özal was. So he's telling these two young hitchhikers how he's successful and the women and this and that and da da da. And so he turns to Özal, who is sitting next to him, this punk, and he says, "You? What are you doing?" And Özal apparently just said, "I just want to be of benefit." And he said, like, this guy's mouth really just dropped. And he was very inspired by what he had said. Yeah, so. Yeah, I met him. I met Özal when he was still quite small. He was maybe 3-4 years old, and already there, you know, we were in Delhi. We were doing a puja in some kind of private house, and there was not enough chairs. And this 4-year-old boy, he looks up and he says, "Can't you find any chair for the people? Any chairs for the people to sit?" A 4-year-old boy, you know. So, and also when we go to the zoo, like this compassion for the animals and. And like that, it's like. But he was, if you know, you know Namgyal, Venerable Namgyal. If you ever meet him, ask, because he was looking after him. They had fights because they have very strong minds, and they are fearless when they're kids, even when they're grown up. You know, so that's difficult. So that he would argue with him why he shouldn't go to sleep now and all this. So they had to make deals and all. It's really funny if Namgyal tells you the stories about how he. How he had to look after, how he was his teacher and his, I mean, teacher in a way, you know, educating him. Yeah, he was a Tushita. He comes to Tushita quite often. And I was also, had the good fortune to be there when his, you know, Lama Yeshe, his previous incarnation, he was cremated in Vashapani in California, in Boulder Creek. And so they made some kind of a stupa, and they renovated the cremation thing, and it was like it was a big love day, because Lama Yeshe would always sign with big love, not big hug, but big love. And so all the old students came, like, you know, from like Anne McNeil, Mami Max, and Max Redlich, Lakelek, and all these people were all there, all these people who were together with Lama Yeshe, and he was there also, Özal. So, of course, one has to still see him as Rinpoche and high. And he said, "Look, I'm not a Rinpoche, I'm not Lama, my name is Özal. If you want to talk to me, I'm here, just come." Very impressive, you know. Really nice person. Very kind. A lot of kindness that you feel in his heart. He makes movies, yeah. That's how he tries to reach people. So, and he gives talks, he's starting to give talks. But he definitely doesn't want to be on a throne. I remember, I think, Max Redlich Gellick, he asked him to teach when he was about 12 years old. And he said, "What do you mean teach? I don't know anything, I'm 12 years old." It's like, kind of, you know, he's kind of, come on. Huh? Krishnamurti, yeah. What's with him?
He was
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And I'm sure, you know, there is. Look, if you have been born and your mother tells you how you were born, that there was a big storm going on, and it was difficult to go to the hospital. Maybe you didn't reach the hospital, but the birth was really easy. Like usually these mothers, they say we don't feel anything. Flutsch, and the baby is there, is here. Yeah, and then maybe the baby sits up. This was Zia's reincarnation. She sat up in full lotus, you know, these kinds of things. And if the babies, when they're still small, they kind of all of a sudden they start to say pe, pe, or they start to say omahung or these kind of things, then you can say I have a friend of mine. He's from Algeria, and when he was also quite 3 years old, as his mother told us, he was just sitting at home and he was going Lassa, in Algeria, yeah? Lassa, Lassa, Kokonor, Kokonor, and he's a wonderful person also. And when he went to, I met him in Dharamsala, and when he went to Hemis, there's this old monk who was up in the hermitage. He came down and he hugged him and he said something. So Diniel is his name. He said, I don't understand what you're saying. And so the translator came, and so apparently he said, wow, finally you've come. I've been waiting for you for so long. And Diniel said, I've never been here before. And then this old monk said, not in this life, the life before. Don't you remember we were both doctors? And he is a doctor in this life, Diniel, also, you know. And each, you know, also with Kutenla, the oracle, the, what's it called, Kutenla, the Nechung oracle, when we went there, he just looked at him and said, yeah, same family. So he's not a reincarnated tulku, but he definitely has the qualities of one. Like this very developed good heart kind of thing. Okay, so there's a very nice movie by Nati Bharats, which is called The Unmistaken Child, where it is the story of how they found Geshe Lama Konchok. Yeah. Yeah, I know. I've been at the movies to watch it in Haifa when it was in the festival.
They show it in Tushita or
now? Yeah, they show all kinds of things at Tushita. It's okay, even if it's from Israel, it's fine, you know. It's not a problem. Don't make a problem out of that. It's not a problem. It's all right, you know. So you are very good movie makers. Yeah, so then you see how this works, and you know, then there's the Bertolucci, the little Buddha. Huh? What's that? Ah, okay. Okay. So what we're doing now is we will all have to die. And this very gross mind that is usually lost in the senses, that's why we don't have access to our inner purity there, it loses its power. Yeah, it disconnects from the senses. It makes the same when you go to sleep. Yeah, like your ear is still open, the sound is still there, but all of a sudden you're not aware of it anymore, or you have pain. And all of a sudden you don't feel the pain anymore because you're going to sleep. Meaning these sense consciousnesses, which are connected also to elements, they lose their power. And so it goes step by step. So you have, like with a dying person, you have outer signs. Like for example, one of the signs at the beginning is they cannot open or close their eyes anymore. And then you have other outer signs a bit further down the line, when the breathing becomes very difficult, like out breath is very long and in breath is kind of like this. They don't suffer, you know, it's okay, this is a normal thing because the air element starts to collapse like that. So that's not so important. What is important for us, because this, you know, first the sense consciousnesses, they're not distracting us anymore with outside, picking up outside objects. And then the concepts, these are called 80 concepts that come either from attachment, anger or aversion, also disappear or dissolve. And then one comes actually naturally into clear nature mind. And this is what people sometimes describe when they have near-death experiences. You know, the tunnel and disappearance and that appearance and all that. And it is like, where do we have it from? From tantric teachings, where one works a lot with the subtle energy body, with channels, drops, winds, and all these kinds of things. Why we tell people what is happening? Because it's quite helpful, of course, when you are dying, so you know what's going on, because your whole reality will shift. Like, we're used that the body is that the earth is supporting us, and when the first absorption happens, like the earth element dissolves, you feel like falling, and you all had it, I'm pretty sure, when you are sleeping also. Yeah, you feel like falling into a bottomless pit. Is it nice? No. You usually wake up frightened. And you know, when you then are dying and you know what it is, if you have the awareness, if you train that and you have the awareness and you know it's normal, you can go, oh yeah, sure, oh that's normal. What comes next? So then again you're focused. And we had also somebody, her brother was dying, and he was kind of for quite a while in a coma, and then he opened up his eyes, and she had just done this course. Sometimes we do courses just on that, yeah, on around death, and we could do again next year maybe, yeah, how about that? So it's because you train that thing. So he opened his eyes and he says, I'm falling. And she just by instinctively said, yeah, it's okay, I know, it's normal. He calmed down, closed his eyes, died. So instead of dying in panic, he died peacefully. And it's very important that we die peacefully, because a peaceful mind activates a positive imprint of throwing karma. This is why when you are with a dying person, it's extremely important, if you can, with any means, even if it's lying, to calm the person down. You know, if the person kind of, because at the time of death, what I have seen, there's a lot of regret and guilt, because it cannot be retained anymore. Things that they have held inside for many, many years, and sometimes it's really stupid things for us when we hear it, but for them it's big, yeah? And they cannot hold it back anymore, and I'm such a bad person. It's really important that you bring them back to the positive things that they have done, yeah? It's okay if they have regret at the time of death, that's quite helpful, but then not to be stuck in this guilty mind. Yeah, I mean, here in Israel, I went to see a woman also, she was dying, and she felt so bad and so guilty. So I said, man, what have you done? She lied to which university she's been to in order to have more status. And I thought, like, for me, it was like, so what? You know, it's like, you have the qualities that you have, and she got the job because of that. You have the qualities that you have the job that you had. It's like, you wrote good articles, so where's the problem? But for her, it was a huge problem. So just hearing that from somebody else, you could have destroyed somebody's existence. You didn't. You could have taken away somebody's partner. You didn't. You could have, you know, made somebody commit suicide. Something. You didn't. So what do you... It was such a relief for her to hear it. But her friends, when they found out, they left her. They didn't come back. Because for them, it was a betrayal. You know, I mean, who wants friends like that? So, but anyway, so it's quite good to be a witness when somebody wants to confess. Please listen to them, but also make them understand, okay, not so great, but it could have been much worse. At least you did not do this, so that they can calm down. Don't go, yeah, now regret, repent, confess. No, okay? Keep them calm as possible. Remind them that they can go now, it's okay. Not to worry, I can look after myself. Thank you very much for having looked after me, giving me my education, blah, blah, and all this. Now you can go, farewell. It's painful. Because if you are attached to the dying person, you can feel that also, you don't want to let them go. You know, I have people that I got attached to, old people, and when I heard that they had died, I also went like, oh no, not because of them. I should have been happy, but because of me. I was always expecting, whenever I came back from outside Switzerland or whatever, because I've called quite often or went to see them, I was always expecting that they would wait until I come back. And sometimes they didn't. Then I could feel my attachment of not wanting to let them go because I liked them. Very selfish kind of thing. So anyway, so if you are with a dying person, then that can be helpful. And if you are the one who is dying and has this feeling of falling, you know, if you have trained that many, many times, actually, if you do tantric practices, you'd go through this 6 times each day. So then you really know it by heart, it's not a problem. And you try to remain as much, as long as possible, in that clear light by having kind of eliminated all the other things. Yeah? So this is why in tantric practice, constantly, you know, you dissolve everything into emptiness with these stages. Out of emptiness, you rise as the deity. Sometimes, sometimes kind of new age practices, they use this, you know, kind of dissolve into infinite space, arise in an ocean of light. So I asked somebody at one point, what does it mean? She said, well, I don't know, you know, space and then light is nice. But it comes from this. Going into the clear light, which the mind does naturally when you go to sleep. This is why we like sleep so much, deep sleep. Yeah, because we are in our true nature there and nothing's going on. Yeah. And then what would happen, like deep sleep would be death in the clear light. And then when we start to dream, that would be the intermediate state, what they call the bardo, between two rebirths, yeah, where the mind is looking for a body. And then rebirth, being reborn, is like waking up. So we actually go through this process every time we go to sleep. It's similar. Like the mind is in a similar state, yeah? The waking mind now, that is dependent on the senses in order to have experiences. Then we fall asleep, then the mind gets more subtle, it's the dreaming mind. And it has experiences which are not depending on the senses at all. You have a total new reality totally created by the mind. Nothing is there, but all of a sudden there's tigers and elephants and lovers and enemies and friends and, you know, all kinds of things. Then we can see the power of the mind. We're totally in it. Yeah. So that's the more subtle level. And then the most subtle level of the mind is the clear light, its nature, this luminosity, this ability to perceive and to know. Without concepts. So it's totally non-dualistic. You cannot really describe it. So, of course, tantric practitioners, when it comes to dying, they get very excited. Because what you're trying to train in your meditation, then at death, it happens naturally. And again, stories, you can believe me or not, the lamas, lamas doesn't mean famous people, the practitioners, the meditators, some of them, they die in meditation pose. They're dead. They don't breathe. They're clinically dead, but the mind is still in the body. And they sit for quite a while, sometimes for days. You know, sometimes they're lying down, but they don't decay. They don't smell. And that means they're in this called tukdam, last meditation, like in the clear light. They familiarize the mind with this absence of inherent existence. And then the mind, the consciousness, the very subtle consciousness, together with the imprints, leaves that body, you know, riding on a very subtle wind. So body and mind actually are always together, only on a very, very subtle level. It's also the subtle wind then develops into the body, and the subtle mind develops into the more grosser mind. So it leaves the body and then goes into that intermediate state, which is a dreamlike state, a dream body, where you can make experiences, and then finds the next rebirth. There's a very good book on that process. Thin is called Death, Intermediate State and Rebirth by Jeffrey Hopkins and Lati Rinpoche. Very good explanation what's happening. Of course, what's his name? Sogyal Rinpoche's book, The Tibetan Book of Living and Dying, it's like a Lam Rim book almost, plus then the explanation what happens at the time of death. I find it helpful to know it, because it will be a very important moment in your life, because you can exit samsara at that point if you realize the nature of your mind directly. Otherwise, it's just, oh, you know, nice moment. This is what everybody says. Was so nice. I didn't want to come back. This is what everybody says. I felt really at home there. I didn't want to come back. But karma not finished, so then the mind is coming back. And as long as the mind is still in the body, you can be revived, kind of. The moment the mind has really left the body then starts to decay, cannot come back. They might describe that they see what's happening from somewhere above, because the mind then is so subtle, it does not depend on the senses anymore to perceive. That's why. But the subtle mind is still in the body. And you can feel it if you have a corpse and you touch, very gently you touch here. If the mind is still there, then still a little bit warm. Yeah. And also if you don't close the person's eyes, if you leave them open, because most of the people die with their eyes and mouth open. Yeah, the Chinese say that the qi leaves through the mouth, the life energy. When the eyes are still clear, that means the mind is still there. But they don't hear, they don't see, they, you know, it's just a clear light, okay? You can cut them to pieces, they wouldn't feel anything. They're not aware that you are there, they're totally in a non-conceptual state of clear light. So don't worry, they're not alive, it's just the mind, the subtle mind is still there. And then when the eyes start to turn opaque, like with the fish, you know, this is how you see a fish are fresh or not. When the eyes start to become like opaque, you understand the word opaque? You know, like the windows in the shower, then you know, huh? Achur. Oh. Like then you know that the mind is gone and that's it. One tries, especially if it's a practitioner, a tantric practitioner, one tries not to disturb the body until that happens. Until you see the eyes getting opaque. Sometimes they have a red drop coming from from the nose, a white drop coming from the sexual organ. I've seen it in an animal. So it's not just practitioners to whom that happens. It has to do with the drops. Yeah, the subtle energy body has meridians or channels. It has winds or chi or prana in these channels, and it has drops. So this is how our subtle energy body is described. If you do yoga, maybe you recognize a few things there. Okay, this I will not distribute now. If you want a copy, you can come and get it at the end of the meditation, so you see all the descriptions, so you don't need to make notes. I will guide you through it, so I would suggest just let yourself be guided. You don't need to remember anything, just visualize what I'm saying and then just go with the flow, kind of thing. When I say this is the moment you would stop breathing, continue to breathe, please. Okay, I'm just telling you what will happen if you would be dying. Okay. Now, if you want, and you have a lot of, because you should, in order to go really with the meditation, you shouldn't have any pain. This is why I keep it to, you know, the most 20 minutes. So if you need to lie down, actually you could, but you would need a whole mattress to yourself, yeah. So you have one, so you're good karma, you have a mattress to yourself. Yeah, if you want to lie down, just lie down. If you can, you can get more mattresses there. Now, but if you are lying down, make sure you are... If you're lying down, make sure you are next to a person that can touch you just slightly when you start to snore. Because, you know, people think it's so funny when somebody starts to snore. It's like, it's not funny, it's just a body sound. There's nothing funny in it, but then people cannot retain their laughter. And if you are lying down, you have a good chance to fall asleep. If you have problems falling asleep when you are in bed and you want to sleep, it's good to visualize these things. These appearances, and very often after the fourth, that's it, you're gone. Because you help the mind go into deep sleep. So it's quite powerful, that thing. You know, if you have problems going to sleep in the evening, if you know these things that appear, then you start to visualize them very quickly. After the fourth or the fifth, you're fast asleep. So this is why I'm doing this with you, so that you might get some tools that you can use in daily life, especially if you are with a dying person. We can turn the light down. And make sure you are comfortable and relaxed. Wouldn't it be nice if we could leave this world in a good mood as we are right now? Peaceful, calm, confident, not being afraid of anything, not panicking. Wouldn't that be great? Oh, I forgot to say, in case you think that this is really funky and you don't want to do it, it's fine with me. And you just go to bed, you know, go for a walk or whatever. I don't want to force anybody to do that because I know it's a bit strange. But now somebody is the guardian of the door there, so that's maybe not so good, because if somebody wants to leave, it's good to leave the... You pull your mattress and you just, you know, go a little bit behind. So that... please feel totally free, you know. And if in case you're panicking and you can't sleep, I am in room number one. Just come to see me. I don't have hot chocolate here. I have in Tushita. That's the best thing to calm people down when they panic. The chocolate, all of it I've given away, so I have pomelo. And tea, so. But anyway, I will try to, you know, just come to see me. Don't panic. It's good to come see me and to, you know, so we can talk about what's happening. Because it could happen. Happens rarely, but it can happen. So make sure you're comfortable. If you want to go to sleep also, if you want to go out, fine. Not a problem. And relax, because why? We do not have to be afraid of death. And this is what Sogyal Rinpoche says also. Because everybody succeeds. You can't fail, you know. It's fine. Relax, it's okay. And we've done it many, many times already. So don't worry. You know, think how that would be if we could go to the next life, just as if we go to an unknown country. A bit anxious, a bit nervous, but curious. Looking forward to it with joy. Leaving this old suffering body behind, getting a new one. Take a few deep breaths, really try to relax. The adventure of maybe finding the nature of our clear, light mind. How can you not be curious? So if this would really be like the dying process, the first element that absorbs is the earth element. It's our body, everything that is solid in the body. So you lose control over the body, and just that can be very frightening. Because we are used to, if I want to use my arm, I can use it. But at this point, you know, there might be the will to move, but you cannot. And if you don't know that this is normal, that's frightening. You might have a feeling as if the limbs are not stuck to your body anymore, and as if the body is shrinking. And you would most probably have a feeling of falling, as if the earth is not supporting you anymore. (Clears throat) you would have problems opening or closing your eyes, your eyelids. But you would have, so these are more or less the outer signs, you would have an inner sign like a mirage or like a Fata Morgana, like flimmering hot air in the desert that looks like a lake or water. Also, if your eyes would be open, the forms that you would see would start to blur. You wouldn't see them clearly. Light is fading out. And so the next element that absorbs or loses its power is the water element. At this moment, your body liquids start to dry up and you feel that very, very dry mouth. Your sweat, your saliva, all of this starts to dry. Can be very uncomfortable. So again, if you know that this is normal, you might not get upset about this, and somebody outside might help you to always moisten your mouth, because it cannot do that anymore by itself. At the same moment, also the ear consciousness loses its power, and you would not be so much aware anymore of outside sounds. What is happening at that moment, also feelings kind of lose their power, or you don't give them so much importance anymore. You know, being comfortable of lying on a bed is not important. Having body pain is not important. So they're not kind of, you're not so impressed by pleasant or unpleasant feelings anymore. And you have an inner vision of smoke. The next element that absorbs, loses its power, is the fire element. Like in the body heat slowly retracts towards the heart. So if you would touch the dying person, they have very cold hands or cold feet, it's okay, but they don't feel uncomfortable. The mind really starts to disconnect, like you might still know that there's some people standing around you, but you don't know who they are, what they're doing here. You lose the ability to smell, and your inner vision is filled with sparks within that smoke. Like when you blow into a wood fire, or when you hit it with a stick, then there's sparks flying. The next element that loses its power is the wind or air element. So at this point you would stop breathing. in-breath, out-breath stops. Your consciousness is still in the body, it still does things, it still perceives things. Like the inner vision would be like a dark room, a little bit like now, just lit by a very unstable candle light, just about to go out, flickering, unstable, and almost going into darkness. If you would be looking at the dying person, then you might see that the tongue becomes short and black or blue. And as I said, breath has stopped. In-breath, out-breath. And you would lose the ability to taste and to touch. So the gross body that is made up of these four elements, you don't feel it anymore. The mind is still there. From now, every step, it becomes subtler and more blissful, actually, because these conceptions that we have that come from our delusions also start to lose their power. So if you do yoga, you know that we have three channels that go down in front of the spine. One of them is the central channel, but we have a lot of other meridians in the body. So all the energy winds, or the chi or the prana, from this energy body that we have, they retract towards the central channel, and first they enter the central channel at your crown, and they slowly travel downwards. And if you've done that before, then you know we have a white drop at the crown. That white drop gets pushed down by these winds, and what will happen is that you have an appearance that is a very clear vacuity, like totally empty of appearances, thoughts, feelings, whatever, but is filled with white light. Light that comes from the full moon reflecting on snow. It's not a direct source of light, it's like the reflected full moon on snow. Then the energy winds in the lower part of the body gather towards the central channel, enter the central channel at the base of the spine, push the red drop that we have at the navel, push it upwards towards the heart chakra, and you would have a clear vacuity filled with copper red light. That's all that would appear. Like the very clear sky at sunset sometimes. Sun is already gone, and the sky becomes red, or kind of orangey red. Then these two drops meet at the heart chakra, very subtle drops, they get locked in there for a short while, and you have an appearance of total blackness, like the tunnel experience that sometimes people describe, no source of light, nothing appearing, just black. Then when these two drops dissolve, it is then that the mind is in its subtlest level. And you would have a very clear vacuity, like on a fresh autumn morning, totally clear sky, no clouds. The sun has not come up yet, it's just luminous. And if you look at this sky, there's no beginning, no end, no hindrance, no obstructions, just space. That is the clear light, which is natural to our mind. So as much as you can, just stay there without having any concepts about it. Just visualize it and think, that is the nature of my mind. Clear, luminous, spacious, no obstructions, no beginning, no end, no hindrances, just space. And then when that clear light of death ceases, it is only then that this subtle mind riding on a subtle wind would leave the body together with the karmic imprints and according to what seed has been activated when the process begins, it would be pushed or pulled towards its new existence. But we're not going to go that far. So in order to really come back here so that you're not too spaced out, because that can happen, we go in reverse order. So from the clear light, you go to the black appearance. From that to the red one. From that to the white one. From that to the flickering candle. From that to the sparks within the smoke. Then the smoke. And then the mirage or the Fata Morgana. And then very consciously you really reconnect to your body, becoming aware of either body sitting or lying, where it touches the ground or the chair. You slowly start to move toes, fingers, being very conscious of in-breath and out-breath, maybe taking a few deep breaths. Kind of knowing who you are and where you are to ground yourself again. Slowly, slowly you can start to move also. Take your time, it's no hurry. And we can think that many, many beings right this moment have gone through this process, maybe slower, maybe faster, because that process can last up to 3 days also, or even longer, or it can be very fast, very quick. So that many beings are going through this process right now, so we dedicate it for them. May they be just as calm and peaceful and composed and curious of what is happening as we were right now. And may we, when it's our time to leave this body, go through this process as we did just now. Relaxed, awake, calm, composed, with a lot of confidence and without fear. So in case you feel a bit spaced out, that's fine, it's normal, because we have let go of all the things that really bother us, the five aggregates, so that's okay. If you have lost your I or me, then that's also good, actually. So don't panic about this, it will come back, don't worry. And so if you want a copy of this so you can study this and practice it, then please take one. If not, fine. And wish you a very good night. Sleep well, because as we said, sleep is really like medicine. So use it like that. And I see you again tomorrow morning. Thank you very much. And the silence starts. It's okay. In case you got upset, you could think, you know, I'm in the emergency room and they just brought me back and there's this light and there's the noise and there's all this. So this is nothing.